Thanks, Piero. Technology these days, it made it sound like there was more than just you playing. I don't know how that works, but it's great. So my name's Matt. If we haven't met, I'm the minister here. Let me be the third person to welcome you this morning, and I'm very carefully going to put this expensive iPad on the ground. Hope you're all right with that, Matt. So the thought this morning, we've spoken about some quite heavy and intense stuff recently, if you've been here on Sunday mornings. And so I wanted to talk about something today that was just really fun and positive and practical, but also something that I think we'd really benefit from growing in as a church, and that is hospitality. But before I say much more, turn to the person next to you and tell them, what is the best meal you've ever had? What is the best meal you've ever had? Okay, let's draw back together. Who said something that was the cooking of the person that they're with? Well done, Tim Weller. That's the right answer, mate. Okay, for me, it's that when Naomi and I got married, we began our honeymoon. We went to Heston Blumenthal's restaurant, the Fat Duck. And we had a friend who paid for this. It's like well expensive. And it was 14 years ago. We still remember it really well. And it was 12 courses, this meal. Right? No carbs, right? Okay, they were like really small portions. And it was just brilliant, every part of it. And I remember a few dishes. One was called Sound of the Sea. And it's this amazing seafood thing. And you have headphones on and you can hear waves crashing. And the food looks like a beach, but it's tasty somehow. I don't know how it works. And then there was one parsnip cereal. And I don't even like parsnips, but it was like eating joy covered in milk. I don't know how they did it. It was incredible. But the best one, they bring out this thing. I don't know if they still do this. They bring out a tray of ice, and it's got a load of other like stuff on it as well. And they pour liquid nitrogen on it. And you eat what looks like just random bits out of a forest. But it tastes divine. It tastes amazing. And it's like when they pour the liquid nitrogen on this ice, there's this smoke all around you instantly, around your table. And it's like you're in the mist in a forest, but you're also eating the forest. But it's also nice. I can't really explain it. And your senses are tricked because really, you're still in a very expensive restaurant in Berkshire, but you feel like you're in this wood on a sort of misty day. It's incredible. And so the whole experience, even years later, we remember it was amazing. Never had anything like it. But what was absolutely crucial, obviously, was who I was with. Did I get a few R's there? It's my wedding anniversary this week, actually, so I'm getting the points built up now. If I'd gone on my own to this place, it would have still been good, but I've just been this weirdo having this incredible culinary experience on my own, rather than a weirdo having an incredible culinary experience with my wife. And what a great thing to begin our marriage with, giving Naomi a wonderful model of the sort of cooking I expected for the decades ahead. Just to be clear, I do as much cooking as she does, just to be clear. It's not as good, but I do as much as she does, don't I, darling? Yes, yeah. On both counts. Anyway, of course, since then, we've had plenty of meals together, whether it's fine dining or Tesco pizzas with the kids. There is something about eating together that is a really good thing, isn't it? It's a really nice thing to do. And believe it or not, if you open a Bible, there's lots and lots of examples and sometimes even commands to do with eating together, to do what is called hospitality. What is hospitality, though? Well, I read one definition and it said, the quality or disposition of receiving and treating guests and strangers in a warm, friendly, generous way. I thought that was boring. This is my own definition. Following Jesus by inviting people to enjoy being with you in your space. Who prefers my definition? You don't have to put your hand up. All right. Following Jesus by inviting people to enjoy being with you in your space. That's what it is. Friendship and intimacy. And Jesus did it like nobody else. Now, hospitality, I think, it doesn't absolutely have to involve food, but given that eating is a universal human experience and need, it seems to be normal culturally, historically, that hospitality does involve food normally. We once got invited to somebody's house for dinner, and we went round, and it soon became clear that they'd forgotten and thought they'd just invited us for a drink. And we're English, so of course we couldn't say anything. And about an hour in, they put some nuts on the coffee table. And I hate nuts, so that made it worse. I remember us getting in the car to go home about 9:30 or something. Before we even had the key in the ignition, Naomi was calling the Indian takeaway and arranging delivery. The evening was rescued. But for us, as long as we've been married, and even before, we've always tried to do hospitality. It's been a value for us. We love it. And for me, I come from a family that really didn't do it at all. I remember my grandma very strongly, she'd say, "Why would you want someone in your house?" Non-family members, why would you have them in your house? Who would do anything like that? Don't have people in your house. And she never hosted anybody but family. And I think we've gone the other way in terms of our approach. We've enjoyed having all sorts of people in our homes and lives, and I think it has a million and one benefits. So I'm a big fan. I think hospitality makes life richer on lots of levels. But we see it in the Bible. It shows up a lot, and it's easy to miss how big a deal it was and is. The Old Testament scholar Scott Barchi, another person with a wonderful name, says this. It would be difficult to overestimate the importance of the table fellowship for cultures of the Mediterranean basin in the first century. Mealtimes were far more than occasions for individuals to consume nourishment. Being welcomed at a table for the purpose of eating food with another person has become a ceremony richly symbolic of friendship, intimacy, and unity. In other words, it's an enormous deal. It was then and it is now. What about Jesus, though? Oh, that's the wrong way. Here we go. What about Jesus? Now, you could say the whole Bible is a hospitality story. Maybe you've never heard it like that. If you're not a follower of Jesus yourself, you might think, well, is the Bible, isn't it just full of morals and miracles and stuff like that? Well, no. Actually, there are loads and loads of meals. In Luke's Gospel, an account of Jesus' life, there's at least 10 occasions when Jesus has a meal with somebody. We see him receive hospitality. We see him arrange hospitality. In Luke 15, when Jesus has been doing public ministry for quite a while, he even gets criticized for it. Would you imagine? Luke 15, verse 2, it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering round to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" I love that they muttered. Blah, 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 complaining about it. "This Jesus bloke, not sure about him. He's eating with the wrong people." Yeah, sinners, the worst people, the bad people. "He sits down with them and has dinner. Can you think of anything worse that a person could do?" Well, yeah, I can think of lots of things. But this is how they thought. Jesus knew that eating with people was a wonderful expression of trust and friendship, and it was powerful. And he would eat with anybody that would eat with him. You could say it was sort of his secret weapon, basically. The writer and thinker Mike Breen comments on this, and he says, "In a world of competing church models and strategies, Jesus employed one practice over all others, sharing a meal with people. Grace, mission, and community are never enacted best through programs and propaganda, but rather through the equality and acceptance experienced at the common table. May our lives never be too busy to live this out." Now, what did his first followers do? What did Jesus' first followers do about this when they saw how he lived and what they did that followed that? After he died and rose again, Jesus' first followers reflected on everything about his life, what it all meant. And one outcome of that is the New Testament book, Romans. And it's a long letter to a church in Rome, and there's 11 chapters of dense theology, all very important. And then right after that, chapter 12, it gets very practical, very quickly, and it says this. And this is basically, this is the first thing the writer Paul says about how to live based on all this good theology. He says, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. And you see that one phrase in the middle that I drew attention to, in the middle of all this big, broad, like this is how your character has to be, all of this stuff, all about who you are at heart, there's this one really important outward habit to grow. Practice hospitality. And it's not separated out from the other stuff, it's mixed in. Being devoted to others, sharing, blessing, rejoicing, living in harmony, associating with people of low position. Sharing hospitality is a real life, down to earth, anyone can get involved, space to live it all out. It's not nice optional dinner parties. It's actually doing the Jesus stuff in your relationships. Elsewhere in the New Testament, when Paul, the same author, writes letters to two younger church leaders, he tells them what they should look for in a church elder. In other words, the people with most responsibility in the church. And everything he says is about good character, but being hospitable is there both times. In other words, to the early church, to even be considered to be involved in leadership, you had to be hospitable. That was expected. It's not a nice extra bolted on thing. It's front and center in Christian community from day one. It just is. But there is one passage that says something that I think is very surprising about how to do hospitality, and this is from 1 Peter. Now, Peter was another early church leader, and in this case, he's writing to Christians who are having a hard time. They've been persecuted, they've moved to different locations all around the known world, really, and they now, all these people that he's writing to, live in strange places away from their homeland. You know, they're away from home. And it's like if you and I went and off and lived in Hungary or something. And he says this, the end of all things is near. Therefore, be alert and of sober mind so that you may pray. Above all, love each other deeply because love covers over a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Now look at the progression of thought. The end is coming. So he's thinking, he's got his eyes on the end of the world. That's pretty big stuff, isn't it? The end is coming. Take things seriously. Speak to God about them. Love people deeply. These are huge, serious spiritual instructions. You can understand why they're, you know, if you're thinking about the end of the world, your mind gets focused on the priorities. And then offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Because the world will end, and because we're taking things seriously, and because love is the great virtue, offer hospitality without grumbling. Seems a little bit small to follow on all that big thinking, doesn't it? Seems a bit little. But what this tells us is that hospitality is more heart than hands. It's more heart than hands. It's one of the natural overflows of loving people in the way that God sees love. If you love people, one way that will show is your hospitality. And to these scattered Christians, they're, you know, living in funny places, to them with different customs, different languages, Peter is saying, offer hospitality. That person that lives next door, offer hospitality. That family round the corner who've got very different beliefs to you, offer hospitality. That couple who raise their children in a way that you wouldn't, offer hospitality. And this was a challenge. The people that received Peter's words in this letter had every reason to want to stay behind closed doors, to keep themselves private and cut off. If you were persecuted and had to move countries, you'd probably feel like steering clear of strange new people. You'd maybe want to keep at a distance. But Peter says, offer hospitality. And he knows what people are like, so he adds that little caveat, without grumbling. That is convicting, isn't it? Without grumbling. He knows full well, when we host people who are different from us, there is huge potential for us to grumble. And the particular Greek word he uses, it's a really nice one, gagousmon, and it's about grumbling to God in particular. Why, God, is that person my neighbour? Why am I hosting this bloke who eats in a really messy way? Why do I need to love that family who just seem really negative all the time? Why do people in this country keep talking about the weather? And Peter says, don't grumble. Grumbling reveals whether the hospitality was out of love or whether it was driven by something else. So hospitality is great. It does a lot of things. But what is so great about it? I was thinking about this. Firstly, well, what happens when we hospitalitize is probably a better way to put it. I invented the word hospitalitize, just to be clear. It's not a real word. But what happens when we do it? Firstly, the host expresses trust. When we host people, we welcome them into our space. They get to see where we live. Maybe they interact with our family. We trust that they're going to behave well. To invite somebody in is a wonderful expression of friendship. And in our culture, where loneliness and isolation is a pandemic that's unseen, it's so powerful and touching to many people when they get an invite. You never know how much it might mean to somebody for you to just say, come round on Tuesday for fish fingers and chips. Something as simple as that could be massive. But secondly, when we hospitalitize, stop laughing, the guest expresses trust. Think about this. If you go round to someone's house and they give you a meal, you don't know quite a lot about the food. You don't. You don't know where they bought it or how old it is or whether they washed their hands or whether they sneezed on it. I'm sure they didn't, okay? I'm sure they didn't. Whatever they give you, you let it into your body. You put it in your mouth. If that's not an act of trust, I don't know what is. And I find as well, more seriously, when you sit around a table to eat with people, there's a special quality of conversation. People let their guard down. Maybe that's because you're physically, you're close together usually, you're facing each other, and you're having the same experience, you're eating the same thing, and there's something about it that is powerful. But thirdly, when we hospitalitize, the act expresses the gospel. When we invite people into our homes and we eat together, we live out something of the gospel. In other words, the core truth about who God is, what he's like. In the New Testament book of Revelation, there's a section of it that's got some short letters written to different churches. And in Revelation 3, there's a message to the church in the city of Laodicea. And most of it's telling them off for things. But at the end, Jesus says to this church, here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me. Eating with somebody was used as a picture of closeness, of the outcome of letting Jesus into your life. And so whenever we sit down and eat together, we express trust and friendship. We're living out, by doing it, we're living out and hopefully enjoying a tiny picture of what God wants to do with all of us. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful thing. And it's why the great thinker Henry Nouwen said this: hospitality is not to change people, but to offer them space where change can take place. It's not to bring men and women over to our side, but to offer freedom not disturbed by dividing lines. As you can probably tell, I'm pretty enthusiastic about hospitality. I think it's a good thing. But I also find that things get in the way. What stops us from doing it? What gets in the way of hospitality? And here are some of the things that I've heard, right? Many very legitimate things. Some people go, well, I can't do it because my house is a mess. My house is too messy. And I think a lot of people do think this and say this, or they feel embarrassed. What if my house is a bit of a state? Or, you know, or even, what if I don't live in what's considered to be the most desirable postcode? Do I have to do hospitality? Well, of course, you know, it may be a good thing to tidy up your house for your own sake, sure. But it doesn't need to be flawless. I mean, if you're going to have somebody around, yeah, wipe the tables, but you don't need to extensively clean your bike shed before you have people around. You don't need to go that far. And remember, the person who'll be most bothered by your space and how it looks is you. You can always see the problems in your own house more than a guest can see them, I would say. Another thing people will say is, well, I don't have time. We live in a busy world, there's stuff going on. Well, the key, I think, is to incorporate this into what you're already doing. You're probably going to eat anyway, right? You're going to eat for you, so you're going to prepare something, make something. One thing our family do, you may have heard me talk about this before, is we have people round for dinner every Thursday from 5:30 to 7. And we do baked potatoes every week, so we just stick them in the oven, very little prep to do, and then wait. And we do our partnership group with different people afterwards at 7:30. And in and around all of that, our daughter, who's 8, goes to her gym class, so we have to take her and we have to pick her up. So it's absolutely chaotic. It's an absolute mess every single week. And that's fine. It's absolutely fine. We just build it all into what we're doing anyway. And now, because it's regular, people turn up with salads and cheeses and they help themselves to drinks. And it all works out great. It's fine. Don't need to worry about it. Another thing people say is, well, I can't do it because it's too expensive. And that is, right now, that's a very legitimate concern, isn't it? Because the price of food, you know, every time I go to the shop, I'm like, that's more expensive again. Remember, the food you serve doesn't have to be unbelievable quality, joints of lamb, bottles of wine floating around. That's not what it's about. And we've found, since we've been doing our baked potato thing, as I say, people, you know, people bring stuff. And quite a lot of weeks, the only thing we buy is potatoes, which costs about £3 to feed, you know, 10 to 15 people. Sometimes we buy some toppings as well, but even that's not loads of money. And I don't want to over-spiritualize this, but I do believe that God provides what we need, and especially so when we do things in line with his kingdom values, which this is. So I believe God will provide as we get on with it. Another thing people will say is, well, I haven't got enough space. You know, where I live, it's not huge, and I've got a small space. Let me just say, our house is not tiny, but our dining area becomes a bit tight once you get past about 8 people, and there's 5 of us. We've done meals with about 20 people, and sometimes people are sat on our living room floor, and do you know what? That's fine. That's part of the fun of it. No one complains, well, not to my face anyway. If it's about being together and not about impressing anybody, there's no problem. We're just hanging out together. It's fine. Now, space can be a challenge. Maybe if you're somebody, you rent a room in a house, or your eating space is shared, or maybe people you live with don't want to do it. That is tricky. We're about to enter the warmer months. Why not just pack up some food and do this at the beach? Or one option is taking food to somebody else. I guarantee nobody will object to that or find it weird. Okay, a few months ago, Antoinette, just to embarrass her, came round to our house with a roast dinner and cooked it in our kitchen while we did something else. And then we ate it together. And it was great. If anybody wants to come and cook us a roast dinner in our house, well, we don't even have to get up. We have no objections. This is allowed. Another thing people say, though, well, my family are challenging. I don't want to have people around because my family are difficult. Maybe, you know, that's you. You're a bit nervous about inviting somebody in. I can sympathize with this. We have 3 young children. They are loud. They are physical. They are not inclined to do anything that they're told. And we can't predict in an evening if they'll actually be asleep or stay asleep. We've no idea what's going to happen. And that makes it hard to plan. But they're our life, obviously. And even when they're at their absolute worst, anyone who comes into our house becomes a role model and an influence, whether that's giving them a cuddle or a bedtime story or giving us some moral support as we try and deal with the latest fallout. It's fine. Another thing people say, well, I can't do this. I can't cook. I can't have people over. I can't cook anything. If that's you, that's a shame. But you don't need to be great at cooking. With virtually no cooking ability whatsoever, you can do a pizza or baked potatoes or cheese on toast or sandwiches, and your guests will have a good time if you talk to them. It's all it needs to be. But finally, and I think actually this is more common and people won't say it, I just don't like people. I just don't like them. I don't want to have them around in my house. I'm English. My home is my castle. It's my place of retreat and tranquility and quiet where I relax. Okay, or maybe, you know, when we think, well, I'm introverted. I want to be on my own. I go out and I work, etc. I just want to be on my own at home. Let me push back on that a little bit, right? I am an introvert myself. I love being on my own. It's the best guarantee I have of engaging with intelligent thought. That's a joke. You can do plenty of time on your own and still love and invest time in other people. And even if you're the most introverted person on planet Earth, you need meaningful relationships to be healthy. You just do. You were designed that way. So you don't need to be with people all of the time, but you do need to be with people some of the time, and they need you. So you don't need to do hospitality every day, but you can do it sometimes. And you might as well do it when you're cooking and eating anyway. Give it a go. You might even like it. But what about us at Maybridge? Now, I know a number of us share hospitality quite regularly already. For you, I'm preaching to the converted, but here's a challenge, because it's good to get very practical. What if sharing hospitality with others, especially those we might not naturally choose to be friends with, became a normal part of our rhythms of life? What if that became normal in how we do church? Could you plan to host people weekly or fortnightly or monthly, wherever it is you want to start? And what would stop you from doing that? What would stop that from happening? Could you plan, for example, to say, I'm going to invite somebody I don't know very well over to eat with us every 3 months? It's not loads and loads. Not a high bar. It could be someone you've met at church. It could be somebody who's new to church, or it could be someone who's nothing to do with church. Just see what happens. Just get inviting. But unless we start with a specific plan, it could just feel overwhelming. Oh, what am I going to do? Certainly the way hospitality is pictured in the Bible, there is something about including people who are not our automatic friends that is really significant. There's a fantastic book I read recently. I really recommend it, called The Patient Ferment of the Early Church by a guy called Alan Kreider. And it's all about how the church grew in the second and third centuries, so a really long time ago. And what's interesting is how unspectacular it is. It's not so much big public sermons and big miracles. One of the huge things that grew the church really early on was that the followers of Jesus, who weren't expected to spend time together, gathered for meals. And people noticed this and asked questions. Honestly, it sounds ridiculously simple, but it's true. The wealthy ate with the poor. The socially high ate with the socially low. On a level playing field, nobody was superior, no one got special treatment. And in the society of the time, this was mind-blowing. People were like, these Christians, what are they doing? That guy's eating with that guy. That family are eating with that family. They're not supposed to interact according to our rules. Why are they doing that? And this was so mind-blowing. This was, you know, these people, they must see the world differently. They do life differently. What's going on? It was the power of trust and togetherness expressed through eating around the same table. And for different reasons, I think that doing so has the same power now. Our society is deeply lonely, and everybody is stressed about being able to afford to put food on the table. Hospitality is one of the great responses to these problems. If we grew as a church in this one thing, I think that one thing alone would have far more benefits than we can see right now. I think it'd be enormous. Let me just share some top tips, and I'll close shortly. Firstly, if you're going to have people around, you're going to do some hospitality, you're well-intentioned, prepare with a plan. Have a plan. It's easier to do hospitality if you're organized. These days, people have a lot on quite often, so just get your diary out, see which days work, what weekends work maybe. When can I do things at a point when I'm going to be less stressed and I've got the time and so on? Have a plan. Secondly, consider comforts. Do you have a guest? You know, you've invited somebody, you've got this plan. Do you have a guest that likes to be tucked up in bed by 9? In that case, don't aim to serve dinner at 8:30. It's just finding out about the person, you know, what's going to help them be comfortable. Do they have dietary stuff? So Naomi can't eat wheat or dairy. So we always have to tell people. Equally, I refuse to eat mushrooms, and I've got moral objections to peanuts. These are the sort of things you would need to find out if you had us round and you were going to make a mushroom and peanut quiche or something equally offensive. What you make doesn't need to be fancy, but it does need to be something that people will enjoy, ideally. And think about the environment too. You don't need to make your house feel like a show home. Generally, you know, a little bit cleaner and tidier, fine. Think about the temperature, for example. What will make your guests comfortable? Are there seats that are more comfortable? Give those to the guests. If your guests have children, what will they enjoy doing? What will they like to eat? What will make them feel welcome? These are all things to consider and ask your guests about ahead of time. But thirdly, it's people over performance. Once people are in your space, don't focus on the food or the environment so much you can't talk to them. Because that's the whole point. Don't spend your whole time prepping in the kitchen and then don't spend any time building a relationship. And also, and this might sound so basic to some of us, honestly, but be interested in your guests. Be genuinely interested. Aim to talk less than they do while you're having them round. I came across this thing, which I think is quite a helpful way of thinking about the levels of conversation that we tend to have just generally, but I think this applies to hospitality. And the first one, when we speak to people, is small talk. You're familiar with that phrase, I'm sure. This is when you talk about the weather or what you watched on TV, and some people are brilliant at this, and some of us not so much. And it's not a bad thing, small talk. It helps build rapport, but you don't want to stay there forever. The next level of conversation is fact disclosure. This is when you tell each other things about yourself, but there's no vulnerability. So, you know, you might be like, well, I've just been on holiday. Or this is what my day job looks like. Or I've just been shopping this afternoon. So it's things that are true, but they're not deep. And again, this is an important part of building rapport. The third thing is common ground. This is when you find you have shared experiences and similarities with somebody. Maybe you had a similar childhood or similar experience of an event, or you've got a common interest. And finally, number four, there's sharing of personal feelings. This is the greatest place of vulnerability, but also where deepest connections are made. It's where you share how you feel with honesty and let people into your inner self. It's hard to get to, and you have to build up to it, but it's incredibly rewarding when you do. Now, I just find this a very helpful way of thinking about how I talk to people. Now, the thing to note is these have all got a place. None of them are like the best or worst or so on. And if you just jump into three and four, that's a bit intense. That might be a bit too much. But hospitality around the table gives us the chance to develop friendships on all four fronts. I've found that in life myself. Some people I've known for years, but I've never got past number two. Other people I've got to number three or four fairly quickly, and the place where I'm speaking to them really helps. In a home with space and time, often is much better and more conducive to having the deeper conversations that we all need. So, everything I've talked about this morning, as you can see, the whole point of it is depth of relationship, of knowing and being known by one another. But just as we close, just want to say this. The reason we've touched on all of it is this. Our hospitality, when extended, reflects the nature of God. In Luke 13, Jesus talks about what will happen at the end of time. Heavy stuff. It's not darkness and isolation. He says, people will come from east and west and north and south and will take their places at the feast in the kingdom of God. Indeed, there are those who are last who will be first and first who will be last. The order of this world, where some have put themselves above others, will be undone. And God's people will gather in this great feast. That's the thing that the Bible talks about in the future, a great feast. And it'll be wonderful. People from all over with different backgrounds and stories from different points in history will be gathered. And surely we'll talk to each other and we'll get to know each other and we'll experience being around a table together, not 24/7, but regularly, I think, forever and endlessly. And so ultimately the story is God invites us to eat with him. That's one way of seeing the story of the Bible, actually, is it's an invitation from God to eat with him. We're not going to outserve him. We're not going to outhost him. And every time we share hospitality, without grumbling, of course, we taste and we share what will be fully realized one day, and it is coming. And so in the meantime, for us as a church, let's think about it, let's practice it, let's enjoy it, let's do hospitality and just enjoy it, all along remembering the person that it's about.